This is a Sound Rebel podcast.
To work with us on your podcast, go to soundrebel.co.uk. Over the Influence is no longer just a podcast. Our online community is buzzing with people like you.
I'm Allie and I live in Southern California. I'm a huge fan of OTI. Their joyful outlook on sobriety is what finally inspired me to quit drinking. I've been a member since day one and I'm rapidly approaching 365 days alcohol-free, which is unreal. I love that Ben and Shaz are not just the podcast hosts. They also openly engage with members during the multiple weekly Zoom meetings and interact on the community member forum. You will not find a more supportive group of people. There's nothing like this in the United States. I'm beyond grateful to be a part of the Sober Rebellion.
You've heard the podcast. Now join the conversation. Go to overtheinfluence.co.uk.
Before we get into this week's episode with Luke Bayliss, we want to give you the opportunity to decide for yourself if you want to listen or not. We talk about some really sensitive issues during this episode with Luke. We talk about drug use, we talk about eating disorders, and Luke also talks about drink driving. So we totally understand if this episode might be triggering. It might not be for you. If you want to give it a swerve, we absolutely, completely and utterly understand. Come back next week. If you're happy to listen about these issues, then the chat's coming up next. Welcome to Over the Influence. As always, it's absolutely fab to have you listening. Thank you kindly. Wherever you are on your alcohol-free journey, you are welcome here at Over the Influence. Before we get chatting to today's guest, a reintroduction, or even an introduction, actually, if you're listening for the first time, as to who we are. My name is Sharon Hartley. Everybody calls me Shaz, based in Lancashire in the northwest of England. I always get excited around this time of year because I think, oh, big milestone is just around the corner. Well, it's September, so it's a little bit off yet, but nearly 5 years alcohol-free, which, when you say it out loud like that, it's absolutely bonkers. At the risk of sounding like a stuck record, I say this time and time again, I never meant to be alcohol-free. I didn't want to be sober. I was only ever taking a break from drinking, and then I was going to get right back on it because, you know, alcohol is life and all that jazz. It turns out it's actually not. And sobriety is really rather good. Fell in love with all things alcohol-free. It's brilliant. And sing about it day in, day out, week in, week out. No, we do it day in, day out as well, actually. Not the podcast every day, but certainly within our community. I'm going off on a tangent again very early in the episode. Ben, help me out, please. Sorry.
Hello, I am Ben. I'm 35. I was about to say 34. That was the old me. I'm older now and wiser. I am 3 years alcohol-free. And in that time, since I've been alcohol free, we've got a mortgage, spent a few months renovating the house, got engaged, getting married next month, had a baby, got a dog. Like, I said to Jem, we're not doing anything next year. I want a nice, quiet year, please, because life just, you remove alcohol and all these amazing things happen. It's just crazy, bonkers, busy. Oh, new job as well. Forgot about that.
Oh, yeah.
That one in.
Don't forget that.
Anyway, yeah. I'm 3 years alcohol free. I was a binge drinker. I didn't drink every day, but when I did drink, I'd go out for a couple and then you could quite easily twist my arm to stay for a couple more. And then I'd be twisting everyone else's. Oh, don't go home. Let's stay out, etc. If that sounds like you, then you're in the right place. You know what, Shaz? My stomping ground was Birmingham. And I do detect a slight Midlands accent on our guest today. So I don't know if we were in the same clubs at the same time, Luke, but blimey, I hope not, to be perfectly
honest.
You are. Yeah. Sorry, Shaz. You do the intros, love, don't you? I'm taking your job there.
Yeah, and I'm going to go in dead early on this. You know, Ben, when we get somebody under the age of 40 on the podcast, particularly fellas in their 30s that are changing their relationship with alcohol, not only changing their relationship, but actually changing their entire lives. I get dead excited, and I will come across Luke Bayliss as a little bit of a maybe a weird proud auntie during moments in this episode, because it makes my heart sing. Luke Bayliss, originally from Wales, 37 years young. I've got to get that in. Welcome to Over the Influence. How the heck are you?
Yeah, very well, thank you. I won't call you Auntie Shaz, so don't worry.
Well, you can do. I quite like it. Call me what you like.
Yeah, I'm very, very well, thank you. I'm very grateful to be on the show, so thank you for having me.
Oh, you're more than welcome. When we started messaging one another on Instagram, and I said, Luke, yeah, just get in touch and just share, if you can, like a bit of a potted history of your life. It was like reading War and Peace.
Do you know what? I say exactly the same thing.
There's a lot, isn't there?
There is a lot, especially to cram into however long we've got. So I will try not to go on too much of a tangent. If my story was in the library, I'd be next to the Stephen Kings, you know, which is a bit of a
really honesty. That bad.
Yeah. But
well, let's start with that. I mean, I don't mean to make light of it at all. You said that it's a horror story, and there's a lot of really serious stuff to touch on, isn't there, before we get to where you are today, which is, am I right, is it about 8.5, 9 months?
Yes, it's 8.5 months, which doesn't actually sound that long, but considering the journey I've been on and how my life's changed, it's just incredible. It's just unbelievable, really. So, yeah, very happy with sobriety.
Let's start with that. Let's go right back, and you pick up wherever you feel appropriate, where you would like to start to share.
Okay, well, probably a relevant thing is school life. I mean, I'll start right at the beginning. I was always a big kid. Yeah, I was short and stocky, you know, for a child, but it's just my earliest memory is 5 to 11 at primary school. And I used to go home and break down in tears to my parents quite often. And I hated school. I didn't want to go. All because of bullying, you know. So I became like, you know, the class clown. And I tried to make people laugh as a bit of validation, maybe. And then that then led into high school as well, secondary school. So it was like, oh, I had a new school, new people. But then I was still getting the same bullying, you know. So it was almost like kind of cemented to me. I just hated what I saw in the mirror. You know, I was very insecure, a lot of low self-esteem. And, you know, and I got to about 15 years old, and that's when I thought, right, I'm going to do something. So I basically starved myself. So I started starving myself, didn't eat at all. And then when I did have to eat with the family, I discovered that I could then make myself sick. So I had like this crossover, you know, of starving myself and then, you know, making myself sick afterwards. So it's just a picture of how my, you know, I had a lot of low self-esteem. I didn't like what I saw in the mirror, and I was just very uncomfortable in my own skin. And then at about 17, I went to college to study music, and that's when I found alcohol. And it dug its claws into me deep from, you know, from the minute I had the effect of it. It was like it made me feel how I wanted to feel sober, if that makes sense. So I latched onto it. But unfortunately, I also latched onto drugs. So I remember I went to a party, and everyone else was taking ecstasy. And I tried it. And what most people would be like, okay, I'll do that once every weekend, you know, maybe dabbling that a bit. I took it to the extreme. So, you know, the way it made me feel, and it made me feel more comfortable in myself, I'd buy them in bulk. I'd go home and I would take them, as well as drinking, upstairs in my bedroom. At the age of 18, I mean, my parents probably downstairs watching EastEnders or something, you know, and I'm upstairs doing that. I mean, and that's quite a significant start to this journey, because, I mean, a lot of people, you know, with our drinking culture, it's drink, drink, drink too much, you know, and it's unhealthy. But with me, it was like head first from the outgo, you know, and that carried on up until a significant thing that happened was I bought a brand new car, brand new Mini Cooper. I think my parents were glad that I bought it because they thought it stopped me drinking too much. And I had it only a month, and I went into the local town for some drinks. I thought, right, I'll have two beers and then I'll drive home or I'll get a taxi back. Must have drank about, well, I drank quite a bit, you know. I was drunk, and I decided to drive my shiny new car home. Got to my village where I lived at the time with my parents, and there's like a really sharp corner, and I went around this corner far too quick and I lost control and I went straight into a house. And I remember getting out of the car, and it was like a war scene, you know. It was like dust, bricks, blocks, everything. And the police obviously came. I mean, this is 2 minutes from my parents' house, which is a bit, you know. And I got arrested. I got done for drink driving. I went to court, and the engineer who monitored the, you know, the structure of the building, actually said that if I'd have driven a certain amount of inches to the left or right, I'd have actually gone into the house and killed the family and myself. So, you know, a massive sobering, you know, event. But I buried my head in the sand. So instead of thinking, oh, do you know what, this is a problem already, you know, I'm only in my 20s, I then just thought, no, I'm going to go to Birmingham every weekend. And I'd leave my house on a Friday afternoon and I'd come back on a Sunday night or Monday morning and I'd just be like a warmed up corpse. It was just awful, you know, and the amount of things that I did in that time, it wasn't just drinking, partying, it was like to excess. You know, I'd be the one who took it too far or never want to leave the party, or I'd end up at some random person's house and then have to try and get home, you know, and it's like an hour to Stratford from Birmingham. So, you know, that's kind of the setting the scene of what it was like. And that just carried on really until I break it down into three breakdowns that I've had, breakdown A, B and C. And I basically at that point, I thought, right, enough's enough. So I moved to London basically, you know, and I buried my head in the sand again, or I'll just move to London. You know, I can't drive, don't need to drive in London. And I did music and I was lucky enough to be involved in some cool things, actually. I played Glastonbury with a band no one you'd have heard of, but it was like up and coming. And we did Maid Vale, you know, all these kind of cool things, but it was always numbed and covered with alcohol. Everything was about drinking. I'd rehearse drunk, well, you know, not on the edge of drunk, you know, I'd rehearse drunk, I'd socialize drunk, I'd play, perform drunk, because it gave me that confidence, you know, like that self-esteem kind of vanished slightly. And I was the person that I wanted to be sober, but obviously I had to drink to get to that point. I mean, after the music stuff, I then started working in luxury retail. So I worked for a luxury retail brand in central London. And there was like a team of like over 200 employees in this store. It's like a global flagship. And I did really well. And then I got promoted and I went to Selfridges and it all just broke down. So breakdown A, if you'd like, was I was drinking every night after work. I then started taking cocaine after work, which would then obviously spiral into the next day. And then I got to a point where I just couldn't take the stress anymore. So it was just, I was drinking on my lunch break. I was then taking drugs at work, you know, and then one morning I turned up and it was obvious that I was off my head, you know, and we had a surprise visit from one of the senior leadership team and it was just so obvious. So I just walked out of work, went to the pub across the road, burst into tears, and then spent like 3 weeks at home on my own in the dark, isolating, drinking to blackout, taking drugs. And it was just horrific. And luckily my parents managed to get hold of me and they came and picked me up. And that's when I moved to Wales with them for a bit. I got diagnosed with depression and anxiety. So started taking medication for that. And then from then, I met someone and we hit it off really well and got very serious. But once again, drinking. I mean, our first day, I had about 4 beers just to meet her. And my whole time we were talking, I was thinking, oh, God, well, I can't have more than one beer because I'm driving. I don't like give a bad impression. And just, you know, the initial stages of a relationship's great, but then it started to creep in and become noticeable. Like I'd be too drunk at a party or I'd embarrass myself or, you know, it was always to excess. And I got to a point where I had my own business and I was using that because I had a workshop. So I was building like timber, garden furniture, things like that. And I was doing something for a Channel 4 program actually, which is really cool. But I took on far too much work too soon. So I basically just started drinking and using it as a coping mechanism. But it got so bad that I would go home and she'd know I was wasted, you know, and then I would then in the morning start drinking again. So it was like a spiral, like cycles of just catastrophe. Like it would just be wake up, drink all day, take drugs all day, sneak in at 3 a.m, sleep in the spare room. She'd come in and be like, what the hell's going on? And I'd say, oh, no, I was just working late because I was busy. But really, I was drinking and I was taking drugs. And, you know, there's so much more missed out. But there was a significant thing where, you know, it's disgusting behavior. And I'm a big believer in learning to forgive yourself for these things. And, you know, the past doesn't define who you are today. But a lot of these things that I did are unforgivable, really. You know, I started basically picking up drugs from Birmingham from someone I knew. So I would drive from Oxford to Birmingham, pick up drugs, and then I would stop off on the way back home in car parks and random places to take drugs. And I did that every single, and I wouldn't buy more than enough just for a day, because I was like, no, I'm going to stop tomorrow. No, I won't do it tomorrow. But then I'd be like, right, I'm going to do it again. So I went back and forth from Oxford to Birmingham every day. And I think the first cycle was like 4 weeks straight. And I don't know how I'm still alive. You know, I could have killed someone. I mean, it's just not even worth thinking about. So, I find it really hard to forgive myself for that kind of, you know, behavior. But that was when I went to the Priory for the first time. So basically, I went to see a therapist once. The lies he was telling in addiction is just hilarious. Like, you know, it's not hilarious, but it's just crazy. It's insanity. I remember that I went to see a therapist for the first time ever because my girlfriend asked me to. And I actually went home drunk with a bottle of wine. And I said, I've bought this. My therapist said, go home, have a drink with your girlfriend to celebrate the fact that you're on your journey to sobriety. Like, how does that make any sense? Things like that, you know, hiding bottles. She had a gin bar at home, and I slowly worked my way through it. And because it was summer, I said to her, oh, no, it's just evaporating because of the heat. You know, things, it's just, why do we think that these things are okay? Like, now that just seems ludicrous. But in the whole of addiction and feeling so horrific, like, you think that lies like that are okay. It's just madness. So yeah, so I went to the Priory for the first time. I ended up going there for 6 weeks for addiction. And it was amazing. But I was in denial. I was wearing a mask, you know, the whole time I was there. It may have looked like I was doing really well, but really, you know, tell me to stop, by the way. I'm just keep talking.
Keep going.
Yeah, there was a session where it's a surprise, but they basically said, we've got a letter here from your partner and we're going to read it out in front of everyone. And we want you to try and, you know, listen to it and learn from it. And it was so bad that two of the girls in the room started crying. And I was sat there just flat, like no emotion. And at the end, I made some comment like, oh, well, she's still with me though, you know? And it was just like, what the hell is it going to take for this guy to see the light and realize, you know? I mean, I'm at the Priory. I mean, I was drinking and taking drugs and not going home and spending nights in hotel rooms on my own, taking drugs all night and drinking. And my girlfriend would be like, where are you? And I'd be like, oh, I'm just at work. And it's just at like 3 a.m., you know, like the things, it's just crazy. Anyway, so yeah, but I left the Priory the first time. And as soon as I left, I knew, because I was like, oh, I'm okay now. I've been to the Priory. I've been to hospital. I'm cured. You know, oh, I could have a few beers. It's who I am. You know, drinking's me. You know, you only live once. It's a party. It's all cool, you know. And sure enough, I relapsed, you know. And started drinking again, but I could never handle hangovers. So I'd wake up and I'd feel so ill from the day before, I'd think that drinking was the answer. So I'd then carry on drinking the next day. And before you know it, it'd been 4 weeks. You know, I had a Zoom call with the director of the Priory and he was like, I don't know how you sat up. I don't know how you're still coherent, because it was just unbelievable. Like, it was sure death if I didn't stop, you know? But I mean, then it got thickened. So I left Priory the first time and then I relapsed. I lost my girlfriend. I lost my dog. I lost the house. I lost the car. I lost my business, which is pretty successful. And I ended up living with my parents, you know, and this is this isn't that long ago. So I'm in my late 30s, you know, and even then that should have woken me up to just how bad this thing is. But I buried my head in the sand and I got a new partner in Wales. And the pinnacle moment, which was a bit like the sledgehammer to the head, is what I like to call it, was we went to a wedding. I was drinking far too much again, covering it all, you know, like a fresh start and all that. And I was still lying to myself, you know. And we went to a wedding and it was her brother's wedding. And I had only met them the first time at this place. So we were all staying in this big mansion, this big house. And the ceremony was in the day. And I ended up getting so drunk that I made a complete fool of myself in front of everybody. And then I went missing. And it turns out, I mean, I blacked out. I don't remember any of this. It turns out I took my clothes off and was roaming the hallways of this mansion in front of all the guests, this girl's family, this girl's parents. And I was really like, I mean, I can't drink. I couldn't drink spirits. That was my thing. And I just did. And I don't know why, you know. And then obviously I lost her, you know, I ended up in my house. I isolated, and this is the pinnacle moment. I isolated for about 4 or 5 weeks, and I woke up, would drink a bottle of wine in the morning. I know we don't like to talk about how much we drank in our, you know, because it's not nice for people to think, oh, well, I'm not drinking that much, but that's not, you know, that's not relevant. But say you understand the severity of it. I was waking up, I was drinking a bottle of wine. I'd then drink about 10 beers, and then I'd drink 3 to 4 bottles of wine on the evening. Now you add all that up, that is death on the doorstep of death, you know? And one evening I just thought, I can't do this anymore. So I was actually, I'm sorry if this is a bit graphic, but I got to a point where I was vomiting so much, I was just vomiting loads of blood. And it wasn't like line of your stomach blood, it was like serious. And I was like, right, I've got to go, I'll go back to the Priory again, because my ex-partner actually had private health care, which is why I could go. So I'm forever grateful for that. You know, I couldn't afford it myself, but I managed to go. But they said to me, this time around, you cannot come for addiction. It has to be for mental health. So you cannot come here and have a medical detox. And because I was so desperate to go, I said, no, I'm fine. I'm not drinking. I'm red and blood, you know, my face is all red because of the sun. It wasn't the drinking. So I kind of lied to get there. So I had to detox. So what I did was something that you should never, ever, ever, ever do. And like, I cannot be more serious about this. Don't ever stop drinking at that point on your own, because you could die. You know, it's as dark and serious as that. But I did it, you know, and I'll tell you now, it's the worst experience I've ever had in my life. I was seeing spiders at the walls. I was lying there shaking, between being sick, shaking in bed, just sweating. And all I could see was this massive spider going up the wall. And because I was so delirious, I shot up, hit the light switch, and it disappeared. And then he'd come back on again and then off again. And I like moved the bed and was like trying to look for the spider. That's how crazy it is. And then I also saw sorry to scare anyone, but I saw like a shadow figure of a man at the end of my bed. I kept seeing it, like looking at me. And I was like, what is going on? You know, and that kind of thing. And luckily I managed to do it on my own. So I went to the Priory for a second time for mental health. My dad came around and he saw my recycling, and the recycling bins were so full of wine bottles, whiskey bottles, and beer cans. He was like, you either open the door or I'm going to call the police. So I let me in finally, you know, after isolating in the dark for however long. And we had a heart-to-heart, I had a breakdown, had a cry, and then I went back to the Priory. And that was when everything just changed. And from that moment, I mean, that was November the 1st. And it was, the difference was I was doing it for myself. I decided I'm doing this for me now. You know, I'm not doing it for everyone else. I was doing it for my ex-partner and my, you know, other people. Now it's all about me. I need to sort this out, or I'm going to die, or I'm going to be homeless or in prison. It's that serious now. You know, it wasn't just I drink a bit too much, I want to get healthy. It was a crossroads of, this is it now. You know, I mean, and that, you can see how much it took to get to that. I can't believe I didn't wake up before. But this is why I want to share my story so much, because there's so many people out there, you know, don't let it get as serious as I did. You know, like, if you've got concerns or you're worried about your drinking habits, work on it now. Be honest, be open with yourself, you know, because it doesn't get better, it gets worse, you know. But I was also diagnosed with ADHD, and that was the game changer. Because I've had therapy so much before, and it just never clicked. And as soon as I found out I had ADHD, and it all just kind of came together and made sense. And then I took the medication for that and saw an ADHD therapist, and all the self-motivated learning that I've put in, you know, learning about ADHD, learning everything and how my brain works. And ever since, it's literally like a switch was just turned on in my head. I haven't even struggled once in regards to drinking since. Like, I don't even think about it. It's just not a thing anymore. Sorry, I'll stop talking now.
It's fine, Lee. And, you know, it's really important to me and Sharon that we let our guests have the space, because this is your story.
Yeah.
This is difficult to say, and I'm going to try and phrase it as well as I can, because the guy who's looking at us on Zoom now is humble, optimistic, healthy. The version of you that you've been describing, that person that you've talked about, was obviously struggling hugely with addiction.
Yeah.
That person was also quite reckless and selfish. And dishonest.
Yeah.
Endangering your life and the lives of other people. You've also talked to us about how you lost the house, car, girlfriend, dog, business, which is devastating. And I'm sorry to hear that, you know, you say that, you know, put it next to the Stephen King novels. I'm so sorry that all of that happened. I think my question is, you say that you now want to tell your story to help other people, which is wonderful. Would that previous version of you listened? If you could have spoken to yourself now as this optimistic, healthy, humble guy, would you have listened?
Do you know what? I just wish that I had someone. Because, I mean, now there are so many people out there who have got this voice of helping others, you know, like that. You know, there's a lot of people out there. But when I was going through all this, I didn't ever listen to anyone. You know, I was in denial, such denial that I had a problem. And I just always thought nothing, you know, it just wouldn't come to what it did. That I just wish now that I could have an hour with myself when I was younger. Because I was just so blind to everything. But I just wish that I had someone to talk to, you know, because I was always isolated. It was always on my own. I was always in my own head. I never reached out and actually spoke to anyone. I never had anyone, you know, I'm not blaming that at all. I mean, you know, but I just wish I had the chance to sit in a room with myself and talk and explain and make myself realize, you know, like what I was being like, and it just wasn't good. I was really unwell, you know, like I haven't really shared any of this until with you guys now, you know, it's like the first time really. And sitting here now, I've just realized just how insane and bad it was, but just how unwell I was so unwell, you know, and I just was so scared to talk to anyone, you know, and so scared to sit in a room with someone and say, I have this problem. This is what's going on in my head. I feel like I need to self-medicate all the time. Instead of going to see a doctor and say the things that I'm saying now, which would have made a massive difference, I was just so blind to it all. And I was just so ashamed of admitting that I had a problem, you know? And yeah, I'm not really answering your question very well, but
you are.
I would have listened, but I needed someone like I am. So I'm like two different people, you know, that's quite obvious. And I wish I had this person to talk to, you know. I think it's just so important that whatever you're going through, you know, you don't have to be the level of what I've been through and what I've done, you know. That's my mind, the one end of the scale. But even if you're just struggling or you're feeling a bit like low self-esteem or low worth, or you know, you're anxious all the time, or just talk to someone. Like, I say this a lot about lads now, you know, the whole, it's obviously not just lads, but there's so many lads who feel like it's weak to be vulnerable, you know, and they feel like there has to be this macho, I'm fine, you know, I get drunk every weekend and really piss everyone off, and I'm, you know, a mess and this and this and this. Like, just drop it. Like, it's fine. It's cool. Like, be open. Be authentic, like get help. Everyone can benefit. I always say, seeing a therapist, people have this view that it's only for people who are unwell or whatever, you know, but it's not. Talk to someone. Just talking to people about everyday problems, everyday things you're going through. I cannot promote it enough. It's amazing. It's what's changed my life.
We're just going to take a really quick break from this episode with Luke. Much more to come with Luke as well very, very shortly, so do stick with us. Before we do that, if you are indeed enjoying this episode and maybe you've enjoyed the squillions that have gone before it, Ben, what would you like them to do?
Sorry, the best AF podcast out there, 5 stars. I'm just reading our reviews that we've got on the podcast channel, because we would love you to leave your review. If you enjoy the podcast, we actually haven't had one for a few months, but people are still listening because we can see how, and in fact, Sharon, over the influence grows day by day at the moment. More and more people are choosing sobriety and listening to us for, as a part of their toolkit, which is fabulous. But yes, please leave us a review if you're listening on Apple Podcasts. Again, which you know loads of you are, because we see the analytics in the back end.
No, you have. I haven't seen the analytics.
No, you're not bothered. is anyone listening this week? Yes, they're still listening. Okay, great, fabulous.
That'll do. That'll do, donkey. That'll
is
do.
Is it just me, mum, and your dad? No, there's more of them. More now, Shaz. Is your dad still listening? Yes, every week. Right. Over the Influence has been the game changer in my sobriety, said Freddie456. Shaz and Ben
amazing.
Are brilliant hosts. They have a great rapport together. Aww. And the guests they have on are brilliant.
Oh, thanks.
A huge array of different people on their sober journeys, which is so inspiring when you're going through your own. Thank you, Freddie.
Thank you. Thank you, Freddie.
Wow. This is brilliant. 5 stars, says Sisra Dude.
Amazing.
2 weeks into my AF journey and feeling like a new person. Just discovered this podcast and I'll definitely be listening every single day. Lots of people say that, actually. They find us and then they go back and they binge and they have us every morning on the dog walk. Or
it's a lot, isn't it?
It's a lot of Shaz and Ben.
Yeah, it's a lot.
Lots of Shaz and Ben. Do you want one more? One more review?
Go on.
This is from Sarah's _sunny_life. Love, love, love. And how many stars, Sharon, do you reckon Sarah's Sunny Life has given us on Apple Podcasts?
I recognise that name. Actually, I recognise that name off Insta. And she's always sharing us to the story. So thank you, Sunny Sarah's Life, or Life Sunny Sarah. You're a ball of sunshine. I'm going to go 5 stars, Ben. 5.
5 stars. Yes. From Sarah's amazing. _sunny_life. Been listening to OTI since day one. I love it. It's kept me going with my sobriety. Ben and Shaz are awesome. With a starry-eyed emoji. We like an emoji on our reviews.
Love an emoji.
If you like Over the Influence and you are grateful that this is a free weekly resource, and it will always be free, then you can show your appreciation by adding a review, because it basically, without going into the detail, it helps more people to find us, to discover us. It pushes us up the charts. The algorithms work in our favour if you leave a 5-star review and you leave us a written one as well on Apple Podcasts. So please do. Right, shall we get back to the episode with Luke?
Absolutely, Ben, and thank you. And just another quick reminder that during this episode, we do talk a lot about some very sensitive and potentially triggering issues. These include eating disorders, taking drugs, and drink driving as well. So we just wanted to give you a heads up. More now from Luke. I think it's a miracle, actually, that you're still here to share this story. Because if it wasn't the drink driving that killed you, it could have been the drugs.
Yeah.
It could have been the alcohol. You could have been in prison. I think it's nothing short of a miracle that you are here to share your story. You said to Ben then that you found it. You were scared of reaching out for help. Scared of saying, "My God, I'm struggling." What were you scared of? And how can you and others help young men that feel that fear, that feel trapped? Tell me more about that.
Yeah, I mean, this is the thing. I was just so scared of, wasn't just scared of other people and what they think. It was scared of me, myself, what I would open up. Like, I locked it all away in this, like, box that I buried deep within me, you know, and I'm only just now. It's taken a long time. I talk about this stuff and we'll get to the positives of what I'm doing now and things and it all this light and positivity, but it's taken me a long time. I mean, I don't even know if I forgive myself right now, to be honest, but it's important to work on forgiving yourself. You know, I'm not the person I was then, but I was just scared of the reality of what I was doing, and I was just digging myself deeper and deeper. And I was just so, I mean, at one point when it was at the end, I literally was so, what's the word? So blind, so hit the fucking bucket, excuse my language. The whole of my life really has been fucking bucket. Today, we'll worry about it later. And when I was in that, you know, in that stage I told you about in my house, when I was contemplating, you know, I was at the end. I felt like there was no point going on. I didn't pay the rent. I didn't pay my bills. I didn't pay I knew I was going to lose my house, you know. I knew that I was going to, I didn't have money for food, but I'd still spend that money on drugs and alcohol to make myself feel better. And it's just insane. But, you know, I was just too scared to see the reality of what was going on in my world, you know. But for anyone, you know, my biggest thing is talk to someone, you know. Don't be scared. There's nothing to be scared of. What's scary is what could happen, you know. On whatever level you are, if you're too scared to face the reality of your demons as such, or your struggles, maybe demons are strong words for some people, but don't be scared. I mean I always say connection, find your tribe. That's what's made the biggest deal for me, which is where I get to dry in a bit. But I found my tribe and through connecting with people and being open with people. I mean, you go on my feed, you know, Andre, it's all about, I'm so open, I'm so honest, I'm so authentic about what I've been through, you know. And I think it's just so important. Like, don't be scared. Connect with others. Reach out. Meet people. And I just wish, like Ben said, I'm so chalk and cheese now. You know, I'm so like, I see people now and they're like, my God, there's no way that you were that person that you're describing. And I'm like, well, I am. But I've just opened my eyes and I've just changed everything about myself and my life within a short period of time, really. But I had to, you know, I just refused to be labeled as that person that I was.
Luke, we absolutely will get to the positives, because we need to get to the positives. You know, your story is heavy. Before we do, I like to ask guests sometimes almost impossible questions. feels like one of them. But what you were describing in terms of your story, was this always going to happen to you? Or did the society and the culture that we grew up in contribute? Because, you know, I made a joke at the beginning, we were probably in the same clubs at the same time. Well, turns out we were, you know. In fact, there's quite a lot of similarities to our story as a kid. And look, it's something I still, it's my Everest for me personally, getting to goal weight. You know, I was overweight as a kid. I got bullied as a kid. We all started drinking, you know, when we were teenagers. Yeah. We were all going out into Birmingham. And you look around, you know, when we were going out to those clubs, Luke, it wasn't just me and you propping up the bar. Everyone was doing it.
Yeah.
You know, it's not necessarily nature versus nurture, because that puts kind of too much emphasis on your parents. That's not what I mean. But do you think that, like, how much can you contribute to society and culture? As I said, almost the impossible question.
I can't blame, like, you know, I can't blame anything other than myself on my behavior. But our culture, our drinking culture, I think is madness, as I'm sure you'll agree. You know, we are almost programmed from a very young age. I mean, when I was growing up, if I couldn't drink 9 pints, you know, like, it was all about drink, you know, that's what we did. And if you didn't drink, you were weird. Like, if I went to my best friends, you know, I'm not drinking, they would be like, what is wrong with you? You know, and it's all advertised everywhere. You know, we used to go to the pound the drink night down the road, you know, and you'd go out with 20 quid and it's all just promoted and glamorized. And, you know, like, I personally think when I was growing up, everything was about drinking. Like, it was almost like programmed into us that, you know, like, I think that if it wasn't for the culture, the drinking culture, if it wasn't for the way that alcohol was perceived, I saw alcohol as a good thing. I didn't see it as a negative thing, you know, like, it was all around me and it was always almost like, I mean, I wouldn't say pushed, but, you know, when you're 18, you're like, oh, I'll have my first pint. It's all proud of your son. You know what I mean? Like, it's all so... And I think it's amazing that we're almost like a U-turn now. You know, it's very exciting times. There's a lot of things now where people are choosing to go alcohol-free, and there's such a awakening to it, you know, which is very exciting, which is what I'm really enjoying being a part of, with dry and things like that, whatever. But I actually, to answer your question somehow, like, I actually do semi-blame in certain areas the culture of drinking, because I think it's, the way it's promoted, the way it's marketed, the way it's perceived, they would never say it's a poison. You watch an advert on the telly, they never say, oh, you know, you're actually drinking ethanol, you're actually drinking a poison, poisoning your body, you know, it is bad. It's still now, you look at, oh, gosh, there was a gin advert the other day, they're all dancing around like some sort of fairy tale. And I'm like, that's poison. Like, do you know what that does to you? Like, to your, and only now I'm open to it because I've learned about it, you know? But I still think people now, they think, I mean, I've had problems, even with family. So I don't want to talk about my family, but the fact that I don't drink is almost like, I almost feel bad sometimes. Like, it's a madness. Like, I've just told you all that I've been through, and I've been to the Priory twice. And there's still that thought in my head of like, they think I'm weird for not drinking or not wanting to drink. I talked to, like, I mean, I've spoke to girls in the past and they've been like, oh, you don't drink, you must be really boring. Actually, no, it's the opposite. You're boring. Like, to go and sit in the same pub and chat the same shit and spend all your money on something that's poisoning you, and then you have 2-3 days or is a write-off. You know, you don't spend time with your family on the Sunday because you're hiding under the covers, and you just do. I'm rambling here now, but that was a very good question, and I would kind of say yes, because it was my environment. Drinking was my environment, which, you know, I took too far, but at the end of the day, I think there is responsibility from the powers above to do something about, you know, like, not everyone drinks to excess, you know, not everyone smokes to excess, not everyone does everything to excess, but that doesn't mean that it isn't a dangerous thing, you know, to certain people with certain brain functions, like, you know, ADHD, you know, you chase in dopamine, you struggle to regulate your emotions, you know, and things like that. And we are more susceptible to substance abuse disorder, you know, it's a known thing. So there should be more warnings. There should be more, I mean, we are doing it now, but I do genuinely think there should be more awareness around the dangers of alcohol.
Safe to say, Luke, that you choosing to stop drinking, to stop taking drugs, you've saved your own life, haven't you? Let's not worry about the bullshit.
Massively.
It was only going in one direction, and probably that of others as well.
Yeah.
And it's every credit for the turnaround. I'm really conscious that we're running out of time.
Yeah.
And we could probably talk for another 3 hours. Let's bring it back to where you are today.
Yes, the positive.
Which is 8.5 months clean and sober.
Yeah.
Very positive. You spoke there about the power of connection. And when that word is used, my heart sings, because it's just, it's the best. But yeah. I know how hard it is for young men in particular to make that step to connect. We've spoken to Dan and James from Fancy Walk, mate. They're doing amazing things.
Them, I actually know Dan very well.
Oh, well, say hello.
Legend. I'll quickly summarize Dryan and Matt Pink and all those guys, you know, absolutely amazing, life changing. And we're actually going on a hike with Dan on the 4th of August.
Amazing. So, you want to get on our Ben Nevis trip? I tell you, we'd have a ball.
Wait.
It'd be so good. So
really,
good.
Yeah. Yeah. Me and pal Robbie, we did Snowden, now we want to do Ben Nevis.
But it's coming back to that word, that the connection for so many, many people, you know, you've talked about being scared and being alone and isolated. Yeah. Once you've found your people, once you've found your tribe and shared your story and talked, you know, a lot of this starts with just talking. It's the absolute game changer, isn't it?
Yeah, like, unbelievable. Like, when I left the Priory, I've made a lot of people friends in there for life, you know, some great, great people in the Priory that I met, but I was alone and I was like, right, I need something. I need a tribe. I need connection. So luckily, we haven't got time for me to go into the whole AA, NA, CA thing, which I did a lot of. And it's unbelievably amazing. It saves thousands and thousands of people's lives every day. Nothing negative about it whatsoever. But for me, I wanted something where I looked forward, you know. I wanted to look forward and become the best version of myself, you know, positivity. So I found Dry, and I mean, I've just been made a life member, which is where they pick certain people to help support the platform and get involved. And it's just amazing. Like, what Matt, Andy and Kristen have done.
I was
great.
Just going to say, for people that don't know, we are big fans of Dry. We know all about it. Just explain what Dry is and tell us who's involved.
So it's the creation of Matt Pink, Andy Ramage and Crystal Day. It's a sobriety platform, but it's also, it's for people who are like myself, who don't want to drink again, people who just want to have a break from alcohol, people who want to, you know, grey area drinkers. But it also focuses a lot on fitness, on health, on, you know, all that kind of aspect of your life. So it's not just about sobriety and drinking. It's about looking forward and getting excited about things. They've just launched Running Dry with Rich Caseman, who's my running coach, an absolute legend.
I know him. I know who he is.
Yes, yes, he's on Anticorps.
Yeah, yes, yeah, yeah. He is.
Oh, he's a brilliant guy. Yeah, he's so him and Matt, they're, it's like a side thing. So it's all about running. So, you know, it's not just about sobriety and problems with drinking. You know, it's about being the best version of yourself. You know, we have challenges every week. And it's just, I mean, the community's like a family. I know it's cheesy, but we went to Matt's boat party recently. We all met, most of us, for the first time. And it's just like, it's just amazing. And it's, yeah, so connection, connection, connection. Find your tribe. I always say that. It's just brilliant. So, you know, if you're thinking, I'm alone, where can I meet people? What can I do? You know, there's so many different things out there. You know, there's you guys, there's loads of things now. It's very, you know, I'm very lucky actually at the moment to have so many options to get involved with. Brilliant. But just reach out, drop me a message, you know, drop anyone a message. And the community is so welcoming, so supportive. It's an amazing place to find your other people, you know. I mean, also audit your environment. You know, for me, it was a massive thing. You know, I stopped going to the pub with people who were all about drinking, you know. I'm not to sound horrible, but mainly I had friends who were all about getting on it, getting on the sesh, you know. And I audited all of that. So I started spending time with people who weren't like that, who were happy for my change, happy for who I am, you know. Stopped going to the drinky boozy events. Now I'm fine. I love it, you know, because I just don't drink and I have a great time. But at the beginning, I think it's important, you know, order your environment, think about yourself, do it for you. Don't do it for anyone else, you know, and take your time, baby steps, brick by brick, you know, to build your wall. And yeah, I made sure, have milestones. So didn't want to focus on alcohol. I wanted to focus on everything else. So I started hiking. I did a fundraisers for Mind and Stand Up To Cancer. Then I climbed Snowdon with my pal Robbie from Off The Sesh, which is Matt's group on Dry. We're all like best buddies for life now. It's amazing. So I did that. And then I was like, right, I want to do a half marathon. So me, Matt, and a few of the others, with Rich as our coach, you know, we're all doing the big half on the 3rd of September. And I did 40 miles on Friday. And I think Rich was like, I think you need to calm down, mate. But it's just amazing. Absolutely amazing. He's like, stick to the plan. So yeah, I mean, exercise, yeah, 5 a.m. routine. People always think I'm crazy. But yeah, I'll get up at 5, do my gratitude, my mindfulness, my yoga, you know. I have a healthy breakfast. I get out and I go for a run, you know, and it's just all about consistency and, you know, yeah, and just positivity, turning it around, you know.
So obviously you brought in all this really positive stuff. Sounds fab. I mean, it sounds tiring, but fabulous. You know, the 5 a.m. and the yoga and the running. I'm tired just thinking about it, Luke, to be perfectly honest. You mentioned about AA, which I think obviously lots of people will know, Alcoholics Anonymous. NA yeah. is Narcotics Anonymous, isn't it? CA specifically yeah. Cocaine Anonymous, am I right in thinking that?
Yeah, Cocaine Anonymous. Okay. Yes.
Kind of, you know, you insinuated that maybe, you know, those groups do a lot of great things. Those organizations do brilliant things for a lot of people, but maybe they kind of look backwards more than they look forwards. They're also anonymous, and you're not being very anonymous these days, Luke. You know, you are.
No, I'm not.
On the world's favorite alcohol-free podcast. I mean, if we're looking forward, then, like, you've told us about who you were, you've told us about who you are now, but who do you want to be?
I just want to be a decent person. I just want to be the best version of myself, and I just want to be happy, and I just want to move forward from everything that I've been through. And just, you know, I mean, I won't go on a tangent, don't worry, but there's too much emphasis now on material things, you know, and I'm so happy just being in the now, getting through what I've been through. You know, I've got exciting things coming up, you know, milestones. But I want, like, yeah, to answer it properly, I actually want to just start helping, you know, getting involved with mental health, you know, and sharing. I'm not a professional, you know, I've only got my experiences, but as you can see, I've experienced a lot. And I just feel like sometimes, you know, it's nice just to have someone who's been there themselves to talk to, who understand on that level, you know. So yeah, moving forward, yeah, I just want to help people. I want to get involved with mental health things, you know, and sobriety stuff, build my profile in that way and share my story and just be happy, Ben, to be honest. You know, it's just great to finally be happy. You know, I sound like a cheese ball. I keep saying I'm like a bag of baby bells to people, but...
I love baby bells. They're one of my favourite cheeses.
Well, I am actually like a massive one, like, and you know, extra red wax all around. And yeah, I just want to be positive, you know, look forward and move on. And you can turn things around. It's never too late. Whatever happens to you, you know, but you've got to put in the work. And like we've said, you know, nail on the head, realize self-recognition, you know, don't be scared, open up, be authentic, connect with people, talk to people, you know. And I mean, I've never been more positive in my life. Like, I can't, it's amazing, really excited, especially to be on here with you guys today. So thank you very much.
Well, Luke Bayliss, thank you so much. You've shared a really painful journey, a really personal journey, and we're ending on the next part of a really positive part of your journey. So all the P's there. Luke, it's been a pleasure. There you go. There's another P. We'll throw that one in as well. It's been a pleasure. Thank you so much for your time and Over the Influence. Very quickly, because we are out of time. Before you go, you mentioned that people can get in touch maybe on social media. Luke, where can they find you?
Instagram's the best one. Luke, it's Luke Bayliss, but with two L's. So LLUKE and then BAYNISS. That's my handle. Add me, message me. My door's always open, you know, anyone, anytime.
Luke Bayliss. Thank you. Thank you very, very much for sharing an incredibly personal story of recovery with us. Safe to say, Luke's turning it all around and it's amazing. So we thank Luke for joining us. If you enjoyed that episode, or indeed enjoyed the many, many more before it, lost count of how many we've done. As Ben always says, you know, we are here until the end of time itself. Ben?
Yes. What?
I don't know. Oh, wait, looking at me today, it looks like I've been dug up, actually.
Shaz isn't feeling very well today. She's had a positive COVID test. What year are we in? But still here,
how
dear listener.
Retro.
That's what she's like.
COVID is still a thing. Yeah. It's still a thing, and that's why I sound I sound awful.
You dragged yourself out of your bed for this, didn't you? We all appreciate it.
Look at it. Quite literally. Yeah. Don't judge the state.
Sharon, let's just quickly, before we go, if you have enjoyed today and you enjoy all the other episodes that we've produced and you've not left us a rating or a review on Apple Podcasts, then please do, because it really helps us out and it helps to share the message. The algorithms work in our favour when you leave a rating and a written review on Apple Podcasts, if you are indeed a listener on Apple Podcasts. So, do you want one more? Because I do like reading these out.
Yes, please.
5 stars from Jules PTC. I'm not sure if I've read this one before, but it's a good one. So if I have, you're going to hear it again. At age 51, I thought I was going to be trapped by the alcohol hamster wheel from hell. Thank goodness I found OTI. I lurked around in the Free Monday podcast and listened every day on my way to work. Listened every day on my way to work and back. Wow, 2 episodes a day. Fabulous.
Gosh.
As a direct result, I'm nearly 100 days alcohol free. My life is better because I cope better with the difficult days. I've lost weight and I'm happier and healthier. My husband also decided to go AF. We are now both discovering a new lease of life. I'm a premium pod listener and I love the banter. Keep on keeping on, please, Ben and Shaz. Pure entertainment. You're better than Anton Deck. Not sure.
We'll take that. Run, Ben.
Better than Anton Deck, not better than chips and curry sauce. That's a classic combo.
Never.
Thank you for changing my perspective on alcohol. OTI is the difference that makes the difference. Forever grateful. From Jules, PTC. Thank you, Jules. If you would like to leave us a rating and review on Apple Podcasts, just go and scroll down. You'll see the like all the episodes there. And then there's a big kind of premium podcast plug, which you should subscribe to because it's great. And just $4.99 a month after a 7-day free trial. You'll see the bit that says hosts and guests. There's a very serious picture of me and a very smiley picture of Shaz. And then it's the ratings and reviews section. So just go in there and click write a review. We would be so grateful if you did it for us. And also, you never know, it's the algorithms and it helps more people to find us. Just by leaving a rating and a review, yeah, you might be helping more people discover the joys of alcohol-free life. So thank you.
Amazing. And thank you, Jules. We could not have really said that better ourselves, could we, Ben? So much appreciated. As always, thank you to our amazing guests. Thank you to you for listening. And thank you in advance. If you're going to go ahead and give us a lovely rating and a 5-star review, that'd be dead nice. We'll be back same time next week.